Okay.
One of the things that will help us as we think about the book of Revelation is this little diagram. There are three symbols in the book that are really prominent. We have, first of all, some seals. Anybody remember how many seals there are? Seven seals. All right, then we come to this next major figure. Anybody remember what it is?
Trumpets.
Trumpets. How many do you think we have of these?
Seven.
And then we come to the third major seal. Anybody remember what they are?
Bowls.
Bowls of wrath. Anybody remember how many?
Seven.
Okay. Now, let me get my pen situated here. Okay. It's interesting when we think about the number seven. As we said before, this is a common number in the scriptures. It's associated with a lot of different things, even creation. When we think about creation, we have it divided up, don't we? God created the earth in
6 days.
All right, we've got two numbers out there. Did he create it in six or seven?
Six.
All right, okay, we agree. 6 days, creation. But the number seven is involved in creation week. 6 days he used to create, day seven,
rest.
He rests. Okay, so six and seven. All right, that's in the beginning of the Bible. Now, God is not a God of chaos. He's a God of order, and he's a God of peace, and God of common sense. He's also a God of thoughtfulness, if you will. Now, if you see this at the beginning of the Bible, one might think, well, maybe God had used this same pattern at the end of the Bible. And he did. In the book of Revelation, this six and then the additional one, which brings us to seven pattern, is also found here. When you go back and you look at the six seals, we said the first six seals describe events during what period? Anybody remember? The Christian era. Then we come over to the seventh seal. All right. If the first six seals describe the Christian era, what's left? All right, eternity. The things, you know, heaven, hell, what will occur after Jesus' return. Okay? That's how the seals are set up. All right, then what's our next major figure? After the seals, we have the seven trumpets. Okay? If the six seals describe the Christian era, and you see this break as you read about the seals, and as you read about the trumpets, and as you read about the bowls of wrath, you see the 6-1 6-1 separation. The six are all stuck together, and then the seventh one is kind of stuck off by itself. So the division is very, very evident in the text. All right. So then, when we think about the six trumpets, we're probably thinking about the same pattern. The six trumpets would then refer to when?
Christian era.
And then when we come to the seventh trumpet, it's probably going to refer to
eternity.
The return of Christ and the things that happen in eternity. All right, and then it's going to be a ways out, but we have the bowls of wrath. So once again, first six bowls refer to Christian era. And then when we come to that final seventh bowl, it refers to eternity. Now, if you can remember this basic information, it will allow you to immediately understand about half the book of Revelation. Now, you might have to go back and study the first six seals and the first six trumpets and the first seven bowls of wrath and say, well, okay, let's kind of figure out what's being emphasized here. But if you know this basic breakdown of the book of Revelation, when you deal with these things, you can say, okay, this is something that happens during the Christian era. And by that, we're talking about the time from about the day of Pentecost in Acts 2 up until the end of time. And then, of course, the seventh item is going to refer to that last period. Okay, anything that you want to add or ask over what we've said so far? Let's pick up with some text and Revelation 8 verses 1 and 2 and then make some brief comments. We're not going to go over everything that we said 2 weeks ago, but enough to kind of bring us up to speed and then try to get into some new material. And he opened the seventh seal. There it is, number 7. We're dealing with things related to eternity. There followed a silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. And I saw the seven angels that stand before God. And there were given unto them, how many trumpets? Seven. Okay, seventh seal, we're dealing with things that are going to be involved in eternity. And John says, as he comes to this seventh seal, he says there was silence in heaven. Now, in the class 2 weeks ago, Steve had a thoughtful response. I actually included that in my notes. But people come up with different explanations as far as what this silence is. We do know for sure that this is the briefest amount of time mentioned in the book of Revelation. And John's not specific as far as why he mentions this silence here, but a lot of different ideas have been put forth. Now, you may remember we've got the angelic praise, the praise from the elders back in Revelation chapter 5. All of this seems to stop. All the honor that's being directed to God. So something significant is being described. Some think that this is kind of a precursor to the final judgment. We talk about the calm before the storm. Well, now, maybe that's what John has in mind. Remember, seventh seal, you know, Jesus returned eternity. You know, there is going to be a storm for some folks, right? The unsaved, they're going to face the wrath of God. So maybe this is, the silence is describing, hey, this is what's being emphasized. Certainly that's true. This may or may not be John's point. Steve's point was a significant pause. Sometimes there are occasions in life where people will make a significant pause. We may pause for a little while to emphasize something. We may pause for a while to get the attention of people. And maybe we have some kind of significant pause here. Pauses before court proceedings, speeches, books. We want people to let something, if you will, sink in. It may be, too, that John uses this pause to say that people are going to be awestruck. When we think about people appearing before God at the end of time, whatever they're going to be able to see, it's probably going to be an overwhelming experience. So maybe John says there's going to be this pause as people are trying to take this in. It could also represent people coming into God's presence, or it may symbolize the final rest, or it may simply symbolize that we don't have a lot of information. This silence is a way of saying perhaps that there are some things about the eternal part of the place where man will be and come before God that we simply don't know. Don?
Well, the reference I show in the Holy Bible is in Zechariah 2:13, it says, silence before the Lord has roused himself.
Yeah.
So the Lord has roused himself with the seventh trumpet, bowl, and seal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Habakkuk was another one. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. And all of those things are probably, surely also going to be reflected on the day of judgment. That when you finally come into God's presence, it's going to be just, wow, we need to kind of step back and absorb this. God is holy, he's righteous, and look at him. Okay, anybody else? Okay, a little bit more. The key point, I think, in the seventh, the final seal here in Revelation chapter 8, is that we are dealing with events that occur once Jesus returns, things related to eternity. All right, let's highlight some information then in verses 3 through 5, and then we'll say a little bit more about the seven trumpets. And another angel came and stood over the altar, having a golden censer. And there was given unto him much incense, that he should add it unto the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayer of the saints, or the prayers of the saints, went up before God out of the angel's hand. And the angel taketh the censer, and he filled it with fire of the altar, and cast it upon the earth. And there followed thunders, and voices, and lightnings, and an earthquake. We've often said, as we're going through this study, that John frequently pulls from the Old Testament. Here, you also have some Old Testament imagery. He goes back to the Old Testament system of worship. You remember, if you were going to have a fire, as far as, you know, for the sacrifice, they took a censer, the Levites, the people associated with the priesthood, and they would have taken coals from the brazen altar, the altar of incense. That's back in Leviticus chapter 16. That's kind of interesting that John says this incense, how much was used of it? A little or a lot?
Much.
You have the prayers of the saints, and to these prayers you have a lot of incense being added. John does not identify for us what this incense is. A lot of different suggestions have been put forth, but for our purposes, as I said, we don't want to rehash all of this, but for our purposes, one of the things I think that you see from these verses is that there will be some prayers that will be answered when? We're talking about which seal? Number 7. And this seal relates to when? Eternity. So here people are going to be in eternity, and you have prayers being dealt with at this time. Well, we talked about 2 weeks ago the fact that in eternity, will there not be some prayers that will cease to matter? In eternity, will there be some prayers that we no longer care about?
Sure.
You know? God, I'm sick. Well, people may pray about that, but are we going to be praying about sickness and surgery in eternity?
No.
No? Not going to be thinking about that. God, I need a job. Well, no, we're not going to be praying about that. So, there will be a lot of prayers in eternity that will no longer have any meaning. But as you look at what we have there, especially in verses 4 and 5, let's go back and take a look at that again. The smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints went up before God out of the angel's hand. And the angel taketh the censer and fills it with the fire of the altar and casts it upon the earth. Now, we didn't get into this last time, but we'll go ahead and make it up this time. All right, Jesus is going to return. What's going to happen to the earth? It's going to be burned up. Well, now, how do we put this together? Let's think about it. If this angel is casting fire on the earth, but the earth is being burned up, how do we square these two things?
That's why they burn it up?
Well, it could be.
Suffering?
Well, it could be. I think that's along the right lines. Remember, the book of Revelation has a lot of symbols. Figurative information. The earth may not be the little earth. It may stand for the people on the earth. And this fire that's being described, maybe not literal fire, but if the earth describes the people who've lived on the earth, the fire that's being cast, is that going to be a positive thing? Is that going to be a negative thing? Somebody's throwing fire at you. Good experience or bad experience?
Bad.
It's bad. So if we're dealing with the judgment, eternity, coming before God, fire's cast on the earth. That's a way of saying who's going to be there and who's going to be punished.
I understand it though that everybody is going to be before God.
Yes. And there, I think that's the reference here. The fire being cast on the earth is a way of saying you're going to be separated, you're going to be sent into eternal punishment. We'll pick up a cross-reference from Revelation 12 after Don's point.
The prayers you're talking about, is that before judgment?
Let's hold on to that point for just a second. Let's finish this out. Revelation 12, across the page, verses 12 through 16. I think these will be the right verses for us. That was in my head. We'll start with verse 12. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe for the earth and for the sea, because the devil is gone down unto you, having great wrath, knowing that he hath a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast down to the earth, he persecuted the woman that brought forth the child. And there were given to the woman the two wings of the great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness unto her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth after the woman water as a river, that he might cause her to be carried away by the stream. And who? Verse 16. And the earth helped the woman. You think that was literally the earth? You think the earth stands for people? The earth helped the women. Think she got help from the rocks and trees? Probably not. But the earth represents individuals. Now, if it represents individuals in Revelation 12:16, my thinking is the same here. Fire was cast on the earth. God says to the unrighteous here at the end of time, what's going to be your fate? You're going to have to be separated from me. So this is a reference to the destruction of the ungodly. Now, going back to Don's question just a moment ago, we have these prayers for the saints. In the class that we had 2 weeks ago, I gave a cross-reference of Luke 18. Now, you may remember that at the beginning of Luke 18, this is where Jesus talked about a woman. And he says, there was this judge. The widow came to see this judge on a regular basis, and she was seeking help. She says, this is verse 3 of Luke 18:3. Avenge me of mine adversary. The judge didn't want to do it. He said, I don't fear God. I don't have any regard for man. But this woman is troubling me, so I will avenge her, because she's wearing me out by her continual coming. Then in Luke 18:6, the text says, and the Lord said, hear what the unrighteous judge saith. And shall not God avenge his elect that cry unto him day and night? And yet he is long-suffering over them. I say unto you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, will he find faith on earth? Now, 2 points. Jesus talks about his coming. I think this is a reference to the second coming. And in conjunction with this point, when the Lord comes, he says God is going to do what for his elect, the saved? He's going to avenge him. We mentioned in that class 2 weeks ago that virtually every Christian throughout the ages has been persecuted by a non-Christian, right? We've been left out of something. People have said something. People have done something. And in a lot of cases, a person's, a Christian's life has not been taken. But they've suffered in some way. And Christians have cried out to God, God, this is not fair. This is not right. Do you see the injustice? Can this matter be resolved? This is something that requires your attention. The picture in Revelation 8 is when the Lord returns. You know, you have these prayers that are just kind of sitting on this altar. You know, throughout the Christian era, you have God's people persecuted in various ways. And you know, here are all these prayers going up. But in many cases, even today, we see people, they suffer wrongdoing from the hands of non-Christians, and it seems like nothing ever gets done. God just allows the wicked people to do what they want to do, and maybe it seems like they're able to do more and more. But God says to his people, hey, with your prayers, you wait. You wait, because the time is coming when the Lord is going to return. And what's that angel going to do? He's going to make sure that things are dealt with. He's going to make sure that things are squared up. He's going to make sure that equality is finally administered here in eternity. Don?
Prayers for people that persecuted Christians, Bill. I was not just talking about the ones still living when Christ returns.
Right. I would understand this to refer to throughout the whole Christian era. And maybe even before. You can go back to the Old Testament era, because there were obviously God's people prior to.
If I understand the progression, right? When the persecutor that did not repent dies, mm-hmm. from the earthly body, he's already going to know that his reward is there. He's already going to be,
yes.
in Hades, right?
Right.
On the other side of paradise. So basically, are they talking in the Revelations simply people that are there, that have gone through this period before Christ returns?
I'm still inclined to go ahead and take that as far as being all of God's people, all of the righteous throughout time who have cried out. You know, yes, they have their, you know, reward in the Hadean realm, if you will. They've gone to a place of peace and comfort, safety and joy. But still, at the same time, you know, let's say, for example, we think about Stephen in Acts 7. He's killed. All right, he heads off to the Hadean realm. He's being cared for well there. Well, that's great. But isn't there something that still needs to be dealt with? What about the people who killed him? Justice hasn't been administered for them. They went to Hades, and you know, we would think that they're suffering right now unless they repented. But still, for them actually to be called before God and to hear, you deserve eternity in hell, and here's why. You are not one of my people. But once again, he became a Christian, so he was forgiven of that. And had he not become a Christian, then he would have been in this group in Revelation chapter 8, where you've got this fire picture, a picture of fire being cast on the earth as a way of saying, hey, the unsaved are going to be punished for things, especially like persecuting God's people.
Well, what's interesting, though, that Stephen or Paul did not ask for quote-unquote revenge.
Yeah.
They asked for forgiveness for their
right.
persecutors. And they were, they're on the paradise side of Haiti, I'm saying, that they would know that their tormentors or persecutors were on the wrong side.
Right.
They would have no need to call out for revenge.
Yeah.
But they already know that they have revenge.
Yeah.
So if they know, would everybody else that's in paradise know that their persecutors are on their own side?
I would think that would be true. But to that, we might add, when people pray about a matter of injustice, usually I think that prayer is going to be regarded as something that's done in this life. It's not that people... You do have back there in Revelation chapter 6, people under the altar. They were also, you know, interested in justice. But generally speaking, people in this life, that seems to be the focus where, hey, there's not something that there's something that's been unjust and it's not been fixed.
Aren't we taught not to ask for revenge?
Romans 12. Right, Romans 12. You know, God is the one who's pictured as the avenger. So there is a balance there, but we can always be interested in having justice done and letting God do it. But the idea that we're bloodthirsty people out there looking for, you know, God to go ahead and, you know, sack somebody and take their life and, you know, rid those, that's not right.
Are we supposed to feel a bit of elation if justice is done?
Here's where I'm going to be very, very careful with my words. I'm not going to use the word elation because that can get you into some dangerous territory. I think you can use maybe the word thankfulness, at least for me, you know, looking to God and saying, God, I know that you're going to do what's right. When what's right has been done, I'm thankful for that. But elation can put you into that category where you feel like, boy, you know, I'm sure glad he got his due. And that's not the road that we want to head down. That can put you down into some dangerous territory. But I think thankfulness, gratitude, you know, old preachers talked about hiding behind the cross of Christ. That more from the perspective of pride. But here, again, you know, God, you're the one that's going to be the avenger. I'm satisfied to sit back and let you do your job.
So the saints on the altar are not in the relationship?
I wouldn't think so. Because once again, God, if you look at it from God's perspective, God is the one who punishes the wicked. But God has repeatedly said, I have no pleasure in the death of the unrighteous. I don't like that. But at the same time, this has to be done. And that should be our position as well. We take no pleasure in it. But it is something that has to be done. We recognize that. Anybody else before we make a few more comments? Okay, introduce the seven trumpets. Let's kind of switch gears a little. We've mentioned from the information on the board, seven seals, trumpet. Now, in this particular case, the trumpets will going to be directed to God's people. And the trumpets are essentially going to say, hey, there are some things that can drive the door and get you into trouble. We're going to see the first four trumpets, all six seal, to go ahead and give us a lot of additional information. And then it's going to be in Revelation chapter 11, verses 15 through 19, where John talks about the seventh trumpet. A lot of different explanations have been given for the trumpets, just like the seals, just like the bowl of wrath. We've said before that sometimes when people look at the book of Revelation, they'll go back through history. And they'll say, okay, this seal or this trumpet, it describes this historical time period, you know, from 100 AD to maybe 300 AD, something. The sixth seal will take us to the end of the eternity, Jesus' final return, and this is also going to be true for the seals. You know, let's look at it this way. If the seventh seal, isn't that the end? People are sentenced to heaven and hell. What's beyond that? There is nothing else. I mean, you are either here for eternity or you're there for eternity. So by giving us this first set of symbols, that is the seven seals, John kind of sets...
You can relate to that number one, number two, number three, says Christ.
Okay.
Is there any way we can tie those things into something we can never see?
Okay. You do have, sometimes it's a little difficult to differentiate, you know, physical from spiritual. So, in the times, there's a little bit of an overlap, Don. It's not always, you know, distinct, but in some cases, you have, like I say, a lot of that overlap. When you think of...
Okay, let me do a more specific thing.
Okay.
And like the trumpet, one, hail, fire, blood, cast on land, one third burn. If that's spiritual, how do we relate to that?
Okay.
Physical, it's not anything we...
Right. Let's actually get into that,
okay.
And then I'm just going to hold your question for that. So, okay. Let's see what else I wanted to give you here. The trumpets are like the seals in three different respects. The first respect you've already seen on the board. Once again, it's divided 6 and 1, 6 and 1, 6 and 1. So Christian era for the first six items. Then you have another point that I think also needs to be brought out. When you look at the information, Revelation chapter 8, verse 13. Remember I said you've got the first four seals. You know, we talk about the four horses, the first four seals, they are kind of distinct, they're set off. You also find the same kind of thing when you deal with this first four trumpets. There is this great eagle that shows up in 8:13, and he kind of helps divide the first four from the seals are going to focus on weeks, how the fifth trumpet is presented from heaven, fallen upon onto the earth. And there was given him the key of the pit of the abyss. And he opened the pit of the abyss, and there went up a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And out of the smoke came forth locusts upon the earth, and power was given them, as scorpions of the earth have power. And it was said unto them, they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree. But only, and here it is, only such men as what? Have not the seal of God. Well, who do you think the people are that don't have the seal?
Saints. Sinners.
Sinners. The unrighteous, the people who are not in a right relationship with God. So that gives you a clue. We turn to trumpet number five. We get through the first four. First four describe things. There's a focus on God's people. But now when we turn to this fifth seal, attention is specifically paid to those who do not have the seal of God. So, once again, as I said, you can kind of further subdivide this. The first four primarily deal with God's people. The last three, a great deal of attention will be focused on those who are not God's people. And then, as we said, that seventh one also has a great focus on the end of time, eternity. Another thing I think that we can point out, a difference, when you think this thing is sealed, does it sound like the events are going to take place? Sounds like it, doesn't it? But with a trumpet, what does that suggest? Something might happen or might not happen? Might happen, because a trumpet warns. So a seal is saying, hey, you can pretty much depend on this. So when we think about the seals and what God said, hey, you're going to suffer death. Well, yeah, that's true. It's appointed unto man once to die, Hebrews 9, verse 27. In the hands of the persecutors, you know, Jesus on that white horse, he's going for a seal, he's going throughout the world and looking for people that he can redeem from sin. That's sealed with the trumpets. Here are some warnings. We don't have to fall. You've dreamed about the cows, you've dreamed about the corn. And Joseph said, the two dreams are one. Remember that? Your two dreams, Pharaoh, are one. So Joseph says you've got these two radically different things. But it's teaching the same point. When we come to the book of Revelation, that's really, in large measure, what John did. He said, we've got different things. We've got the seals, and we've got the trumpets, and we've got the bowls. But really, if you boil it down, we're talking about things in the Christian era, 6, 6, and 6. And we're talking about, with the number, the seventh one, we're talking about the seventh seal, the seventh trumpet, and the seventh bowl of wrath. He says, you know, we're dealing with basically the same time period, the same kinds of things, only from a slightly different perspective. So this is by no means new. Okay, anything you want to ask before we start talking about something else? Okay, we need to pay a little attention to a fraction, the third part of man. Beginning in Revelation chapter 8, verse 7. The text says, and the first sounded, and there followed hail and fire, mingled with blood. And they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the earth was burnt up. Then he says, and the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all the green grass was burnt up. We've studied in this class Bible numbers. We did that because when you study the book of Revelation, numbers play a very, very important part in some of what's said and what we need to communicate. Now, John here talks about a third. But if you remember a few classes back, we had a different fraction. Anybody remember the fraction that we previously talked about? Okay, we have 3.5, but there was another fraction. A fourth? Anybody remember that? John talked about a fourth part of the earth. Now, when we talked about the fourth part of the earth, we laid some things out, and we identified the fourth part of the earth as the human body, the human frame. And the significance was that John used this particular fraction, a fourth, to say that the physical body can be hurt. But even though, you know, Satan, sin, can take our physical body, he used the fourth to say, hey, it can't do what? It can't do more than that. It's kind of like what Jesus said, don't be afraid of them that can kill the body, but they can't destroy the soul. All right, so if that fourth figure, if the fraction of a fourth describes our physical body, now as John uses a different fraction, a third, he's still describing something associated with us, but instead of our physical body, it's probably going to be our spiritual part. The spiritual dimension of mankind. So let's take a look at this. Revelation 8, verse 7, we saw that we've got the third part of the earth. We've got the third part of the trees. They're all being consumed. And then if you continue to read, you find in Revelation chapter 8, verse 8, the second angel sounded, and as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast in the sea. And the third part of the sea became blood. And then you have in Revelation 8, verse 9, there are the sea, the ships. He uses the third part there, and then the rivers. In Revelation chapter 8, verse 10, the sun, the moon, the stars, a third part of these are also burned up in Revelation chapter 8, verse 12. Now, we said, and this was one of the points that we made when we're talking about the fourth. When John said that a fourth part of the earth was burned up, and I think that's in Revelation 6, verses 7 and 8. Yeah, there it was. When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, Come. And I saw and behold a pale horse. And he that sat upon him, his name was Death, and Hades followed with him. And there was given unto them authority over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword. The question was asked, we're back in Revelation chapter 6. Does death have just authority over a fourth part of the earth? No. I mean, if that were the case, we could move to that part of the earth and we'd live forever. So when he says death has, you know, Hebrews 9:27, death comes to all. So when he says death had power over a fourth part of the earth, that can't be literal. It must be figurative. And when we think about death, what part of the human body is affected? Is it the spiritual part? Is it the physical part? It's the physical part. So when he says death has power over a fourth part of the earth, it's a way of saying our human frame. You know, we die. Physically, we lose our life. With that background in mind, John's helped us there to understand the fourth part. Now, as I said, we come to the information here over in Revelation chapter 8, and John is using another fraction to describe the spiritual part. We know that when God created man, we have two basic components. I guess if you think about what we have in terms of similarities with animals, animals have basic life, we do too. We've got the body, which animals also have, but we have this third dimension as well. So since John's dealt with the physical dimension, he uses, as I said, this fraction, a third, to describe man's spiritual dimension. And once again, we just have to keep that in mind as we look at Revelation chapter 8. Okay, 5 minutes left. Maybe we can at least start on the verses. Anybody want to add or ask anything before we get going? Steve?
So this is talking about our spiritual
part. Right, the spiritual part of man. We've dealt with the physical. Remember, death and Hades, they can take your life. With the seals, there's an emphasis on the physical things that happen to God's people. We can die. We can suffer persecution. We can suffer economic loss. All these things of a physical nature during the Christian era. And now John says, okay, we're going to use a different symbol. We're going to talk about trumpets. And here, with the first four, he's saying, we've talked about the physical, so now let's talk about the spiritual part of man and think about some of the dangers.
This doesn't talk about environmental, like partial environmental disasters or anything
no.
like that.
No. No. And we're going to make that point. But that's where a lot of people, when they read this particular chapter, you find people from the religious world are thinking nuclear disaster, or there's going to be, Chernobyl or some other big meltdown. But figurative.
I go to this God giving judgment, partial judgment, like through, destruction of
right. Earthquake, wars, things like that, famines, those kinds of things. We'll work through the text and compare that with another view.
So, right from those standpoint, seals have to do with the physical persecutions of Christians.
Especially the first four, yes.
And trumpets have to do with the spiritual persecution of Christians.
With spiritual challenges. Dangers to our spiritual lives. Spiritual dangers, the possibility of apostasy. Let's at least read the information that we have in 6 and 7, and we'll get as far as we can. And the seven angels that had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound, and the first sounded. And there followed hail and fire mingled with blood. And there were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the earth was burned up. And the third part of the trees were burned up. And all the green grass was burned up. Okay, here the first trumpet is sounded. We've got hail that's mingled with blood. It's being cast down from heaven. Now, if you think about bloody fire, does that sound pretty positive or is it pretty negative? It sounds pretty negative. It sounds bad. And as far as the destructive power of that, if it's bloody fire, it sounds like, once again, it's really, really bad. So when we think about this, a third part of the earth, a third part of the trees, all the green grass are going to be burned. Now, as Don mentioned a moment ago, back there, when we're talking about the seals, especially the first four or five, he lays great stress on how there are physical things in life that can affect God's people. And the fourth part of the earth that was described back in Revelation chapter 6, it's not literal. It describes the physical part of man. But here we said we're focused on the spiritual part of things. Now, when you think about the grass and the trees, you think John wanted to draw his readers' attention literally to grass and trees? No. Remember, this is a book that's filled with symbolism. So if we think about this in terms of symbolism, well, let's go back. We'll run a couple of cross-references here because this will maybe kind of lay the foundation for next week. Daniel 4, 20 to 22. Let's get somebody over there. Daniel 4, 20 to 22. Daniel 4. You have a minute to get there. All right. Okay. And I also want Judges 9, 7 to 15. All right, Steve, Daniel, or Judges? Okay, Judges 9, 7 to 15, and Daniel 4, 20 to 22. Bonnie, I saw your hand first.
Daniel 4, 20 to...
22.
And the tree that thou sawest, which grew and was strong, whose height reached unto the heaven, and the sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of the heaven had their habitation. It is thou, O king, that art grown and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reaches unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth.
Okay, now think about that. Daniel is talking to this king, and he says, there's this tree. There's this giant tree. And then there in 22, he says, this tree is you. Well, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? You're thinking about a ruler. You want to figuratively talk about how great he is. What image do you use? He's a tree. Okay, let's also look at Judges 9, 7 to 15.
Now when they told Jotham, he went down on top of Mount Gerizim and lifted his voice and cried out. And he said to them, listen to me, you men of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went forth to anoint a king over them. And they said to the olive tree, reign over us. But the olive tree said to them, should I cease giving my oil, which they honor God and men, and go to sway over trees? Then the tree said to the fig tree, you come and reign over us.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there, Steve, because we're short on time. But that gives you enough. Thank you very much. The trees, not literally, but trees refer to people. All right, so when you have here in the book of Revelation, chapter 8, a reference to the trees not being hurt, that sounds like we're probably dealing with individuals. Not, you know, not talking about the elm trees and the oak trees and the pear trees and everything else. All right, what kind of grass? Don't hurt any green grass. Green is that color that when we look at it, we think it's dead or it's alive. It's alive, chloroform. Chlorophyll, rather, not chloroform. That wouldn't do too good of a job. But chlorophyll is what makes the green stuff green. And when we think about green, it's got life. Who has life? Christians, God's people, the saved. So when it comes down and says, don't hurt the green things, don't hurt you, stay away from God's people. The trees, and we'll talk a little bit more about this next week, but look ahead a little bit. Revelation chapter 9, 3 and 4. In the next chapter, and out of the smoke came forth locusts upon the earth, and power was given unto them as scorpions of the earth, that they should not hurt the grass of the earth. Well, you know, not literally. He's not talking about insects out there going out and destroying somebody's lawn. He's talking about forces of evil hurting who? God's people, the saved, the righteous. And it was said unto them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree. And then if that isn't clear, he says, and we read this earlier, but they should only hurt the men that don't have what? The seal of God. There it is. The seal of God is put in contrast with the trees and the green things. Now, when you know that, what's that tell you about nuclear disasters and famines and wars? That goes back to your question, Steve. Reading ahead a little bit in Revelation chapter 9, and that Old Testament imagery shows that we're not dealing with physical things. We're not talking about the destruction of the earth, but we're talking once again about the difference between the saved and the lost. All right, that's as far as we can go today. Thank you very much. We'll pick up, Lord willing, with Revelation 8, 6, and 7 next week. Mm-hmm.